Not all of us as Christian parents will have the luxury of homeschooling our children. And with the high costs involved in good private schools, many parents see public school as their only option. Now that's why it's so important for us to do all that we can to minimize the risks involved in sending our kids to learning institutions notorious for being antagonistic to traditional values and to a biblical worldview. Preserving the religious freedom of parents, children, and the teachers and administrators who educate them. That's our topic today on License to Parent. Well, hello once again, and welcome to License to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential therapeutic program to help teens in crisis. And our goal here on License to Parent is to take what we're learning inside the gates of Shepherd's Hill outside the gates so that you as a parent can be more proactive in the way that you raise your kids and take on a biblical worldview so that, well, at least it's our hope, you will not need a residential therapeutic program for your kids down the road. And Trace, you know, we talk about education a lot. We talk about our fondness for homeschooling as perhaps the best option. But it's no secret that education is certainly going to be one of the primary keys of our children's future success. As you've mentioned on the broadcast numerous times before, though, education goes a whole lot deeper than just academics.
It really does, Rich. And for many years, as Americans, we've understood this. Guys like Washington, Jefferson, they may not have had a lot of formal schooling, but nobody can argue that they and guys like them weren't well-educated and men of principle. I like what D.L. Moody once said, and I'm paraphrasing when I say this, but he said something to the effect of, if all you do is educate a guy who's been stealing railroad spikes, educate him, he'll steal the whole railroad. Now, in other words, mere academics without a moral component to education may only produce a more sophisticated criminal.
Well, today's guest would probably like to keep the morals and the principles at the forefront of the education process, and the railroad industry will, I'm sure, rest easier because of that. His name is Eric Buehrer. Eric is the founder and the president of Gateways to Better Education. That's an organization whose mission is to create a better future for our kids by keeping God in our schools. Eric is a nationally recognized authority on the issue of religion and public schools. He has worked closely with Chuck Colson, Focus on the Family, and the Alliance Defending Freedom, and I'm sure that he would say after our conversation today that his crowning achievement was to be today's guest on License to Parent.
Well, Eric, welcome to the License to Parent broadcast. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's really a joy to be with both of you.
Well, tell us a little bit about Gateways to a Better Education and why parents need to know about it.
Well, a recent Barna research survey found that 84% of Christian parents send their kids to public schools. And also they found that half of the teachers in a public school are church attenders. And so often we kind of take an us versus them approach to the schools, but our ministry is based on the assumption that many of us are them. We're in the public schools, superintendents, school board members, principals, teachers, parents, and students. And so often, though, we don't know what we can do. We don't know how to present a Christian worldview. We don't know what the laws really allow us to do. And to use an analogy, if you're driving on a freeway and the speed limit is 65 miles an hour, then you can go 65 miles an hour and not fear breaking the law. But what happens too often in our public schools is they'll drive at 40 miles an hour because they're so afraid of this issue of religion.
Right.
And then, of course, that causes all kinds of traffic problems, too, because you're going too slow. And so what we do is we help schools and parents understand really what can happen in a public school and how to do that and create more faith-friendly environments.
Well, that's wonderful. I see a definite need for something like that. When it comes to the actual laws that are currently on the books as a whole, how much unnecessary fear do Christian teachers and school administrators in the public school system have when it comes to discussing the history of God, the Bible, the Christian faith? Is there a lot of unwarranted fear about the things that they can do?
There really is a lot of fear, and it is unwarranted. The courts have said it's perfectly fine to teach about the Bible and Christianity. In fact, the Supreme Court actually endorses that as it refers to it as worthy of study. The courts have said it's perfectly fine to sing Christmas carols at Christmas, perfectly fine to read the Bible and have students study the Bible for its relevance to history, culture, values, that sort of thing. In fact, you know, I know the controversy over Common Core standards and so forth, and don't need to get into all of that, but one of the things we point out is that even the Common Core English Language Arts standards reference the Bible four times and expect students to understand the Bible as it's used in literature today. Now, so no matter what you think of Common Core, and there are good people on both sides of the issues, but what we try to do is say, teachers, if your state is teaching Common Core English, then definitely do what the standards expect you to do when it comes to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to academic standards, we did a research project called The Bible and State Academic Standards. We looked at every state's academic standards for where the Bible and Christianity are expected to be taught. And people are shocked when they realize that their state standards actually include the Bible and Christianity across the curriculum. For instance, in California, people are shocked to find out a state as liberal as California expects every sixth grader to understand the gospel as explained by the Apostle Paul. In Georgia, the students are expected in seventh grade to learn about Jewish religion, Judaism. They're learning to compare and contrast Judaism and Christianity. They're to understand the development of monotheism, including concepts developed by the ancient Hebrews. That's a quote from the state standards of Georgia. Now, that means you can teach all about the Ten Commandments. What I find is that a lot of Christians have not thought through how their faith, how Christianity, how the Bible has influenced culture and history, and approach it from that perspective. Instead, mm-hmm. we tend to go for the more symbolic things.
Yeah.
So, for instance, we'll say, hey, we want the Ten Commandments hanging in a classroom wall. Well, the courts have already said you can't just arbitrarily hang the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we get stuck on. Everybody then protests, we want the Ten Commandments hanging in the classroom's walls. And we forget the fact that the state academic standards expect you to teach about the Ten Commandments and its mm-hmm. relevance to today.
Yeah.
But we bypass that because we want the symbolic stuff. And that's what really irritates me about so many of my brothers and sisters out there.
Yeah, and what irritates me about it is that the very people squawking about putting the Ten Commandments back in school and prayer back in school don't pray with their kids, and the Ten Commandments aren't hanging in their homes, and their kids or they could quote them.
One of the things, Eric, that I remember in the news just recently was, I believe it was in Rockville, Maryland, the school district there decided to strip out all religious references to the holidays they took as a response to Muslim leaders asking for a holiday recognition. Can you comment on that? What was going on in that situation?
Yeah. Ridiculous overreaction. The Muslim community was also upset that they stripped out the Christian holidays because
sure.
they said, we didn't ask for that. We just wanted to be included.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the political correctness of the school board, they felt like, oh, well, we've got to take them all out. And we oftentimes talk to schools about what is fair. And so often our definition of fairness means equal.
Because mm-hmm.
That's how we teach our kids, you know, share and make sure everybody gets an equal portion.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes fair can mean proportional. And if you look at our system of representation in the Senate, every state gets equal representation. There, fair means equal. But in the House of Representatives, it's proportional to your population.
Right.
And so when it comes to recognizing holidays and so forth, it should be proportional to its impact in the community and reflective of the community. But when it comes to holidays off, it's not even about recognizing the holiday. It's really a practical matter of, are we going to have enough students in our school? Is everybody taking this holiday off? And the fact of the matter is, everybody's taking Christmas off. It's a federal holiday, by the way. And so we're going to close the school. But very few students take Muslim holidays off. And so it doesn't have the institutional impact, and that's why a school wouldn't recognize it.
Mm-hmm. Is there any argument to be made that it wasn't the Muslim faith, the Buddhist faith, the Hindu faith, that really was the foundation of this nation. And that because, as you just said, 84% of parents, Christian parents, send their kids to public school. This whole proportion thing, it would seem to me that there wouldn't be really much of an argument, but it seems that guys like, is it Michael Udow, is that his name, Newdow? Seems to have a much bigger microphone and more weight than the incredible masses that inhabit these public schools and our churches.
Yes, and it's, you know, sadly, the squeaky wheel does get the grease. Mm-hmm. It makes the press, it's controversial, and so it makes the headlines. The fact of the matter is that schools should be more respectful and honoring of the faith community that's in their district, and that, you know, 95% is the Christian community. And so they can be much more open and responsive and respectful and do that without proselytizing, without endorsing any particular religious faith. But so often it gets categorized as, oh, you're trying to evangelize or proselytize.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I see my brothers and sisters kind of do things that are easy targets. There was a case in Oklahoma where the high school wanted to put Ten Commandment plaques in every classroom. Well, yeah. They had them in the classrooms, and the atheists threatened to sue them. And they tearfully had to take them down. It was a big commotion in the district, and they had yard signs and T-shirts and banners supporting the Ten Commandments. But what they failed to see was in their own state standards, as I said before, they had a standard that expected students to understand the Ten Commandments. So rather than teach about it, they wanted this very symbolic thing. Mm-hmm. Or you have, you know, recently in the news, there was a case of a high school that had a statue near its football stadium, and it had Bible verses on it, like, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And the atheist attacked them on that, and they took it down. Here was my concern about that. Where was the Christian community to say, why are you belittling Scripture by putting it on a football statue?
Yeah.
That somehow the football players think that verse says, I can get a touchdown because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Sure.
When Paul was talking about going through severe suffering,
right.
And he can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So I think the church oftentimes is guilty of belittling ourselves by turning Jesus and Christian truths into trinkets, yeah, and symbols rather than substance.
Well, I think we've done that down through the ages. You know, one of the first things we tell our kids that they come into Shepherd's Hill, first thing you need to know, Junior, is the devil does his best work in church. And but, you know, God does his best work there too. And that's the genius of the enemy that he's able to pull off and kind of trick us a little bit. What should parents do when they have a concern about something in their child's classroom that might violate their conscience or their worldview? How should a Christian parent in particular approach that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, before you even approach the teacher, you want to get all your facts straight. Sometimes things come back from the classroom and they're not quite accurate as to what was conveyed. And so the simplest way to open a conversation with a teacher, rather than a how dare you or I can't believe you allowed this in your class, is start with a sentence, help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, my son came home yesterday and was telling me that this or that went on in class. Help me understand now why you had the kids do that or why you had the kids read this. And it may be, oh, no, that's not what happened. Here's what happened. And so the son or the daughter might have misinterpreted.
I see.
But if you do the help me understand, like I had a mom call me from New Mexico, and she said, you know, my daughter is in class. They're saying a pledge of allegiance to the flag, and then they're saying a pledge of allegiance to Mother Earth. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And so we taught her this technique over the phone. She went back to the teacher. She said, you know, help me understand why you're having a kid say a pledge of allegiance to Mother Earth. I never did that when I was going to school. I'm just curious. It's very open-ended, very, you know, open-handed. And the teacher said, oh, well, you know, we've been teaching about environment and not litter and to recycle. And I just thought this would be a great way to help kind of them to remember to be conscious of their environment and the ecology and so forth. And she said, I saw this pledge at a teacher's conference, and I thought, oh, that would be a good way to help reinforce this. So the mother right away realized, okay, so this is not, she's trying to convert the kids to New Age. She's just not thinking about the consequences of what she's doing here. Mm-hmm. So then the next step is, we recommend, besides that saying, help me understand, and getting the teacher's response, is to say, I, in general, find a common ground. So, for instance, this mom was able to say, well, I really appreciate that you want the kids to learn to not litter and to recycle and to be conscious of their environment. That's great. So now you're finding common ground with the teacher, and then you transition to your concern by saying, but have you considered? And in this case, she was able to say, but have you considered, you're really teaching a theological principle, you're teaching a spiritual, religious mm-hmm. principle that there is a Mother Earth is actually a, you know, belief system about Gaia and that the Mother Earth can respond to us and so forth. Well, the teacher's response was, oh, no, I had no idea. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I'll stop doing it immediately. And so the conversation went from a mom who, you know, normally we come in, so often Christians are
claws
intending to be
and
light, and they end up being blowtorches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, the teacher said, thank you so much. I didn't realize I was doing that. I'm going to stop it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Today's guest is Eric Buehrer. He is the founder and president of Gateways to Better Education, an organization whose mission is to create a better future for our children by keeping God in our schools. And we're talking today about ways that that you as the parent can perhaps engage the school administration or the teachers that you come in contact with if your children are involved in public schools in order to do your part to keep God in the public schools. This is Licensed to Parent. We will continue our conversation with our guest, Eric Buehrer, in just a moment. Our kids' hearts, minds, and souls are being influenced by our decadent culture. And with today's smartphones putting access to the world at their fingertips, we're allowing digital technology to become our kids' other parent. Don't believe it? Well, do your kids spend more time with their devices or with you? Don't miss an evening that can change your family's lives forever. Raising Healthy Kids in the Digital Age, featuring parenting expert, author, and speaker John Roseman, cultural expert and American Family Radio host Alex McFarland, and founder and director of Shepherd's Hill Academy and host of the Licensed to Parent radio broadcast, Trace Embry. Together, they share their combined insights on raising healthy kids in the digital age. Saturday, March 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. at Toccoa Falls College. Learn more and get your tickets at licensedtoparent.org. That's licensedtoparent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. Welcome back. You're listening to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. I'm Rich Rosl, along with our host, Trace Embry, and our guest today is Eric Buehrer. We're talking about basically redeeming the public school system, so to speak, getting God back in our educational system. And Eric, there are many throughout Christianity who say, you know, I would never send my kids to public schools. I'm going to look for better alternatives, be it private Christian school or maybe homeschooling. But the focus of your organization, Gateways to Better Education, really seems to be trying to redeem the public education system. Talk about that a little bit. What What led you to fight this fight, if you will?
Well, we're for good education wherever it happens. So homeschool, private school, public school, we're for good education. The fact of the matter is, as I said earlier, 84% of Christian families send their children to public schools. Now, I know there's a growing movement of charter schools. That's wonderful. Growing movement of vouchers. That's wonderful. Again, I'm all for whatever makes for good education. We try to deal with the reality of what is. And what is right now is you've got millions of kids in a school system, and you've got millions of Christians in that school system as mm-hmm. teachers and administrators and school board members. What we're about is equipping our brothers and sisters to do works of service in the public schools, and to do it within appropriate guidelines and legal status and academic standards. What we're doing is simply pulling back the curtain to say, look, guys, all this time you thought you couldn't do all these things, when the reality is the law and your state standards and all the rest expect you to do all these things. Let's change the narrative. We've allowed the anti-Christian forces to define the turf and drive the narrative, and it's simply been wrong all these years. Mm. And we call them the jaw droppers. When we start presenting this, I was just speaking up in San Francisco to a group of school board members, and a board member came up to me afterwards and said, I had no idea that the law allows us to do these things, and our own association agrees with it and thinks that it's important to do. I thought all of this was illegal and inappropriate, and they've never examined, here's what it actually says you're expected to do.
Yeah.
And so all I'm doing is saying, since it's there, let's take advantage of it. And I once had a foundation board executive, we were applying for a grant, and he said, well, I personally like what you're doing because my kids go to public schools, but I don't think our board would support it because we think that public education is a failed model and shouldn't be supported. And I said, I understand that, but it's kind of like saying, you know, the regime in Cuba is a failed model of governance, so we're not going to minister to the churches in Cuba. That's kind of what we're doing now by saying, let's abandon the public schools. Hmm. A, it's not going to happen. You're going to have millions of families still in the public schools. And yet what we've done is we've removed all the influence.
There's an argument that, okay, and I would probably fall into this. The Great Commission was given to adults. I think we need as many Christian people in the public school system educating our kids as possible. But to send my 9-year-old or 8-year-old or 15-year-old into a place where there's a homosexual agenda, you know, there's the evolutionary thought, there's the antichrist worldview, postmodern worldview, and all the other things, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the violence and the bullying and all that other stuff. I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, are we guilty? Can we be guilty of having, tempting our kids to the point of causing them to stumble, where we're guilty of having a millstone hung around our neck and thrown in the depths of the sea because of what we're doing to our little ones. How do you respond to that?
Yeah. Rather than make a generalization about every school, you need to ask yourself, how is my school?
Sure.
Who do I know in that school? What are the teachers? What are they teaching? The other thing, though, is that parents cannot simply take their kids to school and drop them off and walk away and hope that 12 years from now, their kids are going to be strong
Christians. Good point. Right. Good point.
Right.
Yep.
They need to be intimately engaged in what they're learning. And frankly, we have a lot of, and this also drives the Christian school movement, by the way, because Christian schools have the same problem. Parents drop them off and aren't engaged because now I've just shifted it over to you guys. But parents need to be intimately engaged, even more so when their kids are in a public school environment.
Sure. Sure.
And it frankly gives them great opportunity to teach their kids discernment and make them stronger. You know, I was once talking to a youth pastor who made an interesting comment. He said, you know, in our church, we have a Christian school. But he said, you know who's the kids that are most serious about their faith? Are the public school kids in my youth group, because they actually have to live it out day by day. Whereas the kids who are in the Christian school, it's just the soup they swim in.
Right.
They don't have to think about their faith. It's just what everybody believes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'm not saying therefore Christian schools are bad, but I'm saying if a parent is engaged and has the kinds of conversations that they need to have with their kids regarding what they're learning, and they read their textbooks and they engage with them, it can actually be a growing experience for them. But it's individual. I mean, there are school districts that are terrible. There are school districts that are very good. And a parent has to make that decision based on their own individual situation with their kids and with their schools.
Yeah. Eric, you have done a lot. I mean, Gateways to Better Education, the whole purpose of your organization is to help equip parents and communities to equip their schools to be moral agents, not just educational agents. But you've written a Bible study for parents called Keeping the Faith in Public Schools. Talk to us about that, and also tell our parents how they can obtain that.
Well, our website is gogateways.com. And so if they visit gogateways.com and go to our bookstore, they can read more about it. But we put this together as a real roadmap, as a handbook for parents. And it deals with all the issues we've been talking about. How do you get to know the teachers? How do you reach out to a teacher when you have a concern? How do you teach your children discernment? And we actually put scripture verses with academic subjects, so as they're talking to their kids, they can tie the academic subject to scripture and see that God has spoken into all of the areas that they're studying. It's how do you use simple things, like how do you promote teaching the Pledge of Allegiance as a way of understanding the Founding Fathers' view of our rights coming from God. And we find that most teachers have the kids say the pledge, but they never teach them what it means, and especially what it means to be a nation under God. And so there's all kinds of very practical strategies dealing with holidays, dealing with books that they read, dealing with how to know when to remove them from a program or how to use it as a discerning opportunity. And it's put in the context of a Bible study. It's not just a manual for how to help your kids succeed in school, but how to help them succeed in life and develop as Christians.
That's awesome.
Our guest today has been Eric Buehrer. He's the founder and president of Gateways to Better Education, an organization whose mission is to create a better future for our children by keeping God in our schools. And gentlemen, I'm sorry to have to call time on you, but our time is up today. If you'd like to find out more about Gateways to Better Education and Eric's Bible study that we mentioned a few moments ago, Keeping the Faith in Public Schools, you can find out more at gogateways.com. And this is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long therapeutic residential program for teens in crisis, located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. You can find out more about our outreach to the parents of those teens by going to licensedtoparent.org. There you can listen to archives of our daily and weekly programs, and you can also check out Trace's blog, Insight for Today's Culture. Learn more at licensedtoparent.org. And for Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosl, inviting you to join us again next time when once again you can renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.